What do you do, number 10?
What do I do for a living?
Yes.
I'm a comedian, stuff.
Off. Come on.
You're a comedian?
I'm a comedian, stuff.
The most serious bloke I've met.
That doesn't say a lot about my comedy then, does it?
Tell me a joke.
I'm a 46-year-old father of two. I'm a comedian, and I've signed up to this.
Was that meant to be a joke? All right, relax. You're a comedian.
I am.
I would never have guessed that.
Fair to say it was an inauspicious start for Merrick Watts on SAS Australia. He's one of the recruits, Channel 7's hit series. It's the finale tonight. And he's still there standing. The funny man who the staff didn't think was that funny at the time. I wonder how he's feeling right about now. He joins us on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Merrick.
Good morning, Jess. Look, I was just starting to get over it. Then I heard that audio and it all flashed back. It's PTSD. That's what happened to me on the entire course. I'd rather get punched up by Mitchell Johnson again.
Well, there's been a few things that have happened along the way. Firstly, going back to it all, to the start of it, which we sort of got a bit of it in that little play on, you're 46, father of two. Why did you sign up to this?
Look, you know, I do like a challenge because I'm an idiot. But also, too, I knew that, you know, it's one of those things that just galvanises you mentally and physically. And I thought at that stage, my confidence was down. And, you know, in footy parlance, boys, if you would understand, of course, is that there's... Sometimes you can have a confident player who plays their best footy when they are absolutely at their confidence peak. And when they're not actually much good to the team. And that's how I was feeling about a year ago, that I'd lost my confidence. And I need my confidence to perform my best at everything I do. So I knew that if I did this, I'd be able to get my confidence back. And it did. It gave me that.
Merrick, you just touched on it tests your physical and, I guess, your mental capabilities. What surprised you the most? Was it the actual physical nature of getting through sort of a day physically, or was it the mental draining that this sort of exercise takes on?
Yeah, look, the physical challenges are pretty tough, but they are just that. They're just physical challenges. What it is the resilience to take day by day, knowing that every single day is just getting harder and harder, and you're sleep-deprived, you're calorie-deprived on a point where it's just ridiculous. You know, you might be burning 6,000 to 10,000 calories in a day, but you might only eat 1,000 calories, so you're just in deficit all the time. And, you know, compounded with that is the unknown. You never know what you're about to go and do. You never know where you're at or what's going on or even what you're actually being tested for. Sometimes you think you're being tested for something, but it's actually something else that they're looking for in it. So it's about being constantly switched on. So it's a combination of the mental and the physical, but don't underestimate the cold. The cold is just brutal. Like, you can't see it, but we were always cold.
You're in pretty good shape yourself, but what physically really shocked you or challenged you? Was it, you know, lugging the backpack around? If you had your time to train for it, would it be hit the weights? Would it be do more running, cardio sort of stuff?
No, look, I didn't do any gym work at all. I reckon I went to the gym about three times in my entire preparation. I did most of my stuff at home. Like, I packed up a backpack with 40 kilograms and went for a 31-kilometre hike for 6 hours with no food. That was probably the toughest preparation I did for it, and that was probably the smartest preparation I did for it, because it's actually about how much pain you can handle. That's what it's really about. Like, get to that point where you're not only exhausted, you're actually in pain and telling your body that you need to drive harder. And I think for me, for the most physical one would have been in the snow. I think that was the hardest for us all when we're driving up through the snow. And it just gets to the point where you have to make that decision that you are going to burn yourself right to the wick to get to what you want to achieve, which for me was to be at the front of the pile at the front of the pack and to lead it through.
So, Merrick, was it intimidating being part of a group where so many of them were professional athletes and you're a comedian, to say, well, how can I stack up against athletes? I mean, how did you go through that process mentally?
Well, let's qualify this by saying I'm not sure that I'm actually professional at anything. I don't think I've got any qualifications. You know, I'm a half-wit and an athlete, you know, 11 twice at Elton Heights. So, you know, I'm not exactly formidable in any sense. So, yeah, it's pretty intimidating when you're standing next to an Olympian, somebody who's represented their country, and one of the best AFL players in the Women's League. It's pretty full-on being around them. you've got a rally driver who's extremely switched on and very capable, and Shannon Ponson, who spent his entire life in the fitness circle. So, yeah, I was the only person without a sports or fitness background. But I didn't really think about that. I just thought about what I could do and how far I'd push myself. And I in my mind, when I went in there, there was quitting was never an option. I was either going to drive forward and end it, or I was going to break in half. Those are the two options.
Because I must confess, and we've talked about this, the show on our show quite a lot, I'm a bit obsessed about it, just in, and particularly the role that you played about mental strength, and sort of, you know, doing things that you perhaps didn't think you were capable of being able to do, and then seeing others that mentally wilted. It was quite extraordinary, ones that you wouldn't have expected.
Yeah, and that's what it is. Like, they told us that, you know, before we went in, it's probably 80% mental, 20% physical. And there's two elements of the mentality behind it. Is one is, you know, pushing your body beyond what it's comfortable with, pushing it beyond, you know, once the actual survival mechanisms of your body kick in and is screaming for you to stop. It's not even about being competitive anymore. It's begging you to stop doing it because you're harming it. And you override that circuitry and say, no, I'm going to push on. That's a big part of the mental game. And the other part of the mental game is just saying, there is nothing that is going to make me quit. There's nothing more important to me than completing this course. And that you go in with that. You learn the other stuff. You learn the perseverance when you're in there. But you go in with an attitude of, I will die on this course before I will quit.
That seemed extreme, Merrick.
Yeah, well, look. As Ann Middle pointed out, I'm not very funny. I went in there and parked all of the jokes and just went, I'll do comedy when I'm finished, thanks. What I'll do is I'll just do this now. I'm not very ambidextrous mentally. I can't do two things at once. So I went in there with, you know, a kill or be killed kind of attitude, and then when I'm out, now, you know, I'm back to myself.
Just on that too, that meant what Ant said to you. I mean, there must be no worse question in the history of the world for a comedian to get someone come up to you and say, tell us a joke.
Honestly, I would have been happy if he hit me with a shovel. What's sad though, too, fellas, you'd reckon that I would have thought about that question coming to me before I went in. You know, I had 8 months to prepare, and at no stage did I think that I would be asked the most obvious question. Just shows you how you can prepare too much in one area and not enough in another.
So, Merrick, is it true that you were desperate to do this? That this is something you almost sought out the producers to say, or through your manager, I want to do this? Because it seemed that it's something you've always wanted to do?
Yeah, look, I actually think I might have been the first person to sign on. I found that the day that I read a trade magazine saying that it had been commissioned for Australia, I was already a fan of the show. I loved the UK version. And so I literally rang my manager immediately and said, you've got to get me on the show. And she said, but you don't do reality television programs. I said, this is not like going to the jungle and somebody making you eat a cockroach. This is 10 times everything. Apparently I'd already been shortlisted as one of the names. So they obviously, you know, the producers already went around the circuit and had a look at all the celebrities they thought were pretty unhinged, and my name was at the top of that unhinged list. And from there, it just kind of happened pretty quickly.
Magnificent. Well, it's been great to watch. And now tonight's episode, there's the finale tonight. You've got five left. You've got rally car champ Molly Taylor, AFLW player Sabrina Frederick, James Magnuson, world champion swimmer, yourself and Nick Cummins. Of course, the Honey Badger from Rugby Union, which our listeners would know quite well. When you first got in and you worked out who was who in the zoo, Mary, who did you think would still be there that wasn't there in the last day?
That's a very good question. Look, to be honest, I reckon after about a week, you kind of figure out who's going to be there on the last day. I think, you know, the group of us that are there towards on that last hurdle, we kind of had a fair idea that we would be there, to be honest.
Yep.
It's just, you can see it in people's eyes. It's a funny thing, and I was told this before I went on. One day, you will wake up in the morning and you'll just see somebody's body language. And they will be down, their eyes will be down, something won't be right, and you'll know it. And you know that they are gone, that the crack has started, and the DS are going to drive a crowbar into that crack, and that's exactly what they do. And you can just see it. So with Shannon, I was surprised. I was surprised that I could see that he was suffering. I could see the hypothermia had knocked him around badly. So when he did VW, I was very surprised. But I wasn't surprised that it happened. Just that it happened at that time. We're all shocked. You know, we're all getting ready to jump off, and he just said, "I can't do it." So everybody has a breaking point. It's just about where it is.
Now, this is a question that's come from my wife, who is obsessed with this show. Farass, is he as bad as what he came across on the TV? Will you still be mates with him? We need to know what happened to Farass.
Farass has his own understanding of the world, and you know, good luck to him. He's got a very unique viewpoint on reality. Unfortunately, it's not actually reality. Otherwise, it'd be great. He faced his own reality for us. You know, obviously, he and I had a spouse on the show, and then he kind of continued it off the show, which I'm not really interested in engaging with him on it. But Farass is very, very physically capable, but his problem with me and the problem with himself and the problem with that course is his attitude. And you've got to have the right attitude. If you want to get through to that final day, to the chicken up, and you want to be there, you've got to have a different attitude. That's what's required. You go there to play their game. You don't go there to play your own.
That's a good answer. I like that.
That's a good answer. And out of all the people, if you got to choose one to take with you to the trench one day, who would you take?
Look, I tell you what, I was very, very close to Sabrina. She's an absolute legend. I'm good mates with Magnuson as well. Mags and I have a lot to do with each other. Sabrina and I talk regularly. Badger is a wicked bloke. And geez, you'd love to have him in a trench next year. He's an absolute beast. But for me, Sabrina and I clicked from day one. I reckon it was the footy thing. You know, as soon as we got talking about footy, that was on. Being a Collingwood member for my entire life, you know, we connected straight away, talked about AFL, and we bonded from the get-go right through to the end.
Well, that's a disappointing feedback about the Collingwood, but from Eltham, that's sort of... it's not too far off the mark from the Diamond Valley out there, so that makes a little bit of sense.
That's right. That's why I went so far. They breed them tough out there. Cause we didn't like to play football in CBFL. What we like to do is go to a boxing match and throw a footy in the middle of it. So.
did you play for the Turtles or someone out there?
I played for the Eltham Panthers as a junior.
The Panthers?
So that's the home of Peter Moore, and he played his junior football there. And Peter Moore actually grew up across the road from me in Eltham, and obviously the Bruce Dool was around the corner, the Shaw boys were around the corner, so it was a very strong footy area when I was a kid.
Now, it's a super strong footy area still out there in the neck of the woods out there at Eltham. Hey, Merrick, it's been good fun watching you, must admit. You've impressed the socks off me the way you carried yourself through all this, and I'm sure you've gained a bit out of it yourself through the journey. And we're looking forward to seeing the finale tonight at 7:30 on Channel 7. Good luck.
Thank you very much. And a piece of advice for anybody thinking about it, do what I did. Lower everybody in the world's expectations by being a total half-wit and then surprise them.
I'm running with that theory. That's my go at the moment. I can do that.
Yeah,
I can do that.
You're doing a great job of it too, I should say. You are very underwhelming.
A nice way to finish. Good on you, mate. Thanks for your time this morning.